Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Eric.
And we are proud affiliates of the You Run Podcast Network.
Head on over to YouRunPodcast.com to check out all of our content, all of our affiliates' content, and so much more.
See y'all there. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another riveting edition of Under the Floorboards, where we laugh at the creatures that go bump in the night. I am your host, John, joined as always by my beautiful co-host, Eric. How are you this week?
Fucking sweating.
Because we are joined by an equally and actually more so beautiful guest this week, the one and only, the Baroness of Blood herself, Lynn Lowry. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I've never been called the Baroness of Blood before, so I'll have to remember that.
I've been sandbagging that since we originally talked about doing this show.
That's a great title. So I'm doing great.
Thank you so much for being on our show this week. We've talked about it. Any of our listeners already know that we have a lot of love for you. You're an absolute inspiration to this community, and you do so much throughout your entirety of your career. And something Eric and I were actually talking about, like, as one of our first questions that I'm kind of fascinated about is your accent and the way that you speak. Like, I kind of have to know, because, like, you speak like such this classically trained thespian, right? And where does that really come from? Tell us a little bit about, like, your upbringing and where that comes from.
Well, I was born in Illinois, actually Cahokia, Illinois. And so I kind of have a Midwestern accent. And I just, when we moved to the South, we moved to Atlanta when I was, I think, 15. And I just was definitely not going to pick up a Southern accent. I just didn't want to have that, you know. But I mean, I can do a Southern accent, but I don't have one. So that's the best, because you just really want to kind of sound neutral and then add accents on when you want to use them. So I can do New York, Irish, English, Southern right now, kind of German maybe if I really worked on it hard. So yeah, that's, you know, pretty much neutral, Midwest, earthy.
It's just so elevated. It just has such a, yeah, there's a quality to it.
Midwesterners are very down to earth, honest, you know, kind of people. So that's me.
Well, it's no surprise, like, you've had such an incredible career, you know, starting from, honestly, I Drink Your Blood. When did y'all start filming that? Was that in 69 and it released in 71? Or
no, we filmed it in 70. And what was it, released in 71 or 70? I never remember. I thought it was 71.
I can't remember either, because it's my brain only works so well.
You probably weren't born then anyway, right?
He wasn't there. Yeah.
So yeah. I actually think it's 70, because next year, I believe, is the 55th anniversary of I Drink Your Blood. And we will be at Cinema Wasteland in April.
Oh, wow.
Elizabeth Marner Brooks, who plays the bakery owner in I Drink Your Blood, and Rhonda Fultz, who is the pregnant hippie. So the three of us will be there. The three ladies of I Drink Your Blood.
That's super cool.
And next year is also the 50th anniversary of Shivers.
Yes.
And you actually just hit the one of the anniversaries for the Crazies as well, correct?
Yes. I think it was the 50th. I think okay. That was last year, maybe.
I think so. Which is one of my personal favorites. And that was actually my first exposure to you, personally. And
is that a pun? Exposure?
Yeah.
He's a professional, and he's
that's why they pay me the big bucks, as Mark Cantu likes to put it.
I see.
So actually, I wanted to ask you about I Drink Your Blood, because this is, like, so different from everything that you see, especially nowadays. Like, I think that storytelling is always kind of this cyclical thing where, like, new ideas will come out and, you know, originality and such. But this felt like, the first time I watched it, was so groundbreaking for its time. Like, what did you think when you read this crazy fucking script for the first time?
Well, I don't think I actually read the script.
Gangster.
David told me I was going to play a mute. So I thought, well, why read it then? Because I have no lines. So I really didn't know what I was getting into.
Is this information I need?
Yeah. It's like, you know, you're going to be a mute hippie on acid with rabies. I thought, okay. You know, who cuts off? Well, that wasn't in the beginning. That my big scene was not original because I wasn't in the script at all. That's why I'm not credited at the end of the movie.
That's crazy. I didn't actually.
Because my name is not ever listed in the actors who were in it or in the script anywhere. So the people that did the credits and put the movie together didn't even know I was in it. So, you know, and it was my very first feature. So I thought, you know, well, what the fuck? It's gotta be something interesting. I mean, I had no idea what it was going to be. So it was as big a surprise to me doing it as it was to you when you first saw it.
You like see the pies on the table for the first time, and you're like, huh, neat.
Those pies were frozen. They were. They didn't cook them enough, and they brought them all out to us hoping that we wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
And we were like, there's ice on them. So they took them back and I guess they cooked them again a little bit, but they brought them back again and they were still cold. And I mean, it was really unpleasant eating cold meat pies.
That explains your reaction. I don't know if you remember this or not, to the plate of ribs that you were served in that speakeasy in Pittsburgh for the after party of Wolf Hollow. Just like, these are fucking disgusting.
I'd had a little bit to drink that night, boys. So I was a little bit buzzed.
Couldn't tell.
Anyway. I would say you definitely held it together than we did. But
yeah.
It's crazy because I guess it's probably a good thing they didn't credit the chef for the pies in that one.
No, I don't even know if they had an oven. I don't know what they did. You know, it was pretty, it was all hands on, you know, and, you know, and there were a lot of drugs on the set. Now, I don't think people were on drugs when we were filming, but I couldn't be 100% sure about that. But when we weren't filming, there were, you know, I'd never smoked marijuana before. I certainly had never taken acid before. And I mean, it was a trip in all definitions of the word.
Okay, so now I have to know. So like in between shooting, what was that like? Because that's insane.
Hey dudes, John and Eric here from Under the Floorboards podcast.
Today, we're turning the spotlight over to Pop Culture Reflections, a podcast, all things pop culture from the 80s, 90s, and beyond.
Justin and Greg tackle everything from pro wrestling to music, television to cultural goings-on, and film to freaking whatever, man.
Check out Pop Culture Reflections on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and as always, YouRunPodcast.com.
Well, we were, if we had like a day off or 2 days off, you know, I was lodged with the crew because there was no more room in the front house with the actors. So they put me in the back house with the crew, and that's the best thing in the world they ever could have done because the crew was so great. You know, they were so real, you know, people, as opposed to, not that Bhaskar wasn't a real person or, you know, the actors weren't, but crew is different. So to be part of the crew is kind of cool. I felt like I was with the cool kids.
Yes.
But so we had this, it was so small, I can't even make my finger small enough to show you how small this tab of sunshine acid was. It was so small. And you just think, well, this isn't going to do anything. And I'm telling you, the cows talked to you. It was amazing. I was playing in a mud puddle at one point. Thus, you know, I couldn't figure out how to get into the car. I was soaking wet from the mud and the rain. And I was like, I know that you're supposed to be in this thing, but how, you know? And then I finally figured out the handle. I got the handle. I got it open. And then it was like, how do you get in it? Do you put your arms in first? You know, do you put your butt in? It's just like, it was insane, but so fun. It was so fun. But I'm not saying anyone should do that, especially now, because they don't have that kind of stuff anymore. So,
no.
I mean, they have it, but I wouldn't take it. It's not like that was. That was pure.
Those were better times.
Yeah.
Like, they were better times back in the day.
That's incredible. And it honestly, it fits the bill for the style of movie y'all were doing.
Yeah.
It did. Well, David Durson told me he wrote the movie while he was on acid.
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah. He said he took LSD and wrote that movie. So, you know, it was a crazy movie. I mean, when they cut Alex Mann's leg off, they had his leg in a hole in the table. And David took a magic marker and drew where his real leg started and the false leg was. And he told George Patterson, who has the axe and has rabies and is crazy, to be sure not to hit above that black magic marker because he would hit Alex's real leg. I mean, that's what we were doing. It was madness.
I was going to say, that sounds like insanity, top to bottom.
That's kind of like the level that I would love to see some indie films kind of get back to. It's like, well, don't hit him in the leg because we've got one shot at this kind of
thing. Yeah.
Such an authenticity there.
I mean, there is, because you really, I think we only had one leg. So, we had his leg and the other leg.
There isn't
it's kind of like, you know, when model hunger, when I had to, I don't think that ever worked, but when I cut into her breast,
mm-hmm.
it was like there was only one breast to cut into. And if I messed it up, it was lost. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, on you to make sure you get that in right. And also in Halloween Feast, when I had to stick the corkscrew in her head and pull the brain out, the brain didn't come out the first two times, and they had one more time to try. And I'm like, well, God, I mean, it's not up to me to get the brain out. I mean, the special effects people are supposed to make this happen. I'm sticking it in and pulling it out, but you know,
guys, we have one fucking brain left.
one left. Come on, Lynn. Okay,
the hero they deserve that day.
How is this on me? Hey dudes, John and Eric here from Under the Floorboards podcast.
Today we're turning the spotlight over to Pop Culture Reflections, a podcast all things pop culture from the 80s, 90s, and beyond.
Justin and Greg tackle everything from pro wrestling to music, television to cultural goings-on, and film to freaking whatever, man.
Check out Pop Culture Reflections on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and as always, YouRunPodcast.com. Throughout your career, you know, you've all, like, obviously a lot of the expansion of it has been over top of horror, especially in the modern era, and you've kind of been, like, the baron, like I said earlier, of so many films that have come out between Halloween Feast and Model Hunger, Wolf Hollow. Like, there's so many amazing projects that you've been a part of, and you've had plenty of films where you've done comedy and drama and thriller, mm-hmm. and all of that as well. So what makes you gravitate and continue to stay in this realm?
Well, that's where people ask me to work. I mean, that's where I get the jobs.
Fair enough.
Nobody asked me to do a big Hollywood, you know, James Bond movie. They want me to do a movie where I kill eight people. And I'm like, okay, you know, I mean, I love horror. I have absolutely no regrets about, you know, being in the horror genre. I did actually do a film this past year with Gregory Blair called The Mystery of Emma Thorne. And it's a beautiful, beautiful film. And I play this woman who, I'm not going to go into details because Gregory wouldn't want me to, but she's pretty ill. But she's a beautiful character, person. She's got light and soul, and there's nothing mean or crazy or anything about her. You know, she's just really delightful. And it's a very sad and yet hopeful film. So I love doing things like that. But mostly I'm cast, you know, either as a victim or as the killer. You know, in Grind, I play a totally different character.
So that's actually a great segue, because and obviously we don't want to get too much into it, but I've been talking to Mark a lot. I've seen a lot of the stills. It's a really, really cool project, guys, if you're into like Lovecraftian style horror and the Cthulhu fucking transdimensional shit. This movie is going to be so cool. And Lynn has a character in it. Can you tell us a little bit about your archetype and a little bit about your experience working again with Mark?
Well, my character's name is Connie, and she is the manager of the theater. But, you know, she doesn't own it, but she practically owns it. I mean, she runs the whole thing. And so I asked Mark if I could wear, I saw her kind of like as like with a New York kind of quality, you know, kind of like that, a little bit hard, but, you know, you like her, you know, that sort of thing, with short hair. And, you know, she's tough, but she's got a heart. So that's kind of how I played her. And it seemed to work, you know, really well. And I get to, you know, have a gun, and I get to be tough, and, you know, all that. And it was really interesting working with Mark, because when I worked with Mark on Wolf Hollow, my scenes were pretty isolated. In a way, like I was with the other people, but I had my scene kind of in entirety with the people. But with Grind, I was participating with the whole group. And that was a little bit more difficult for me, because I'm used to being, you know, just having like another person, you know, with me, or maybe two people, but to have like, you know, 10 or 15 people, you know, and come in with your lines on the right cues and have all the action and everything like that. I hadn't really done anything like that. I don't think in my career, even in Gregory Lambertson's film, the Eden film, mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of it. I'm so bad with names. But anyway, my whole scene with the gun on the porch was just that. But there was a lot of activity in the scenes with Mark, you know, and Mark's really fast, you know. Mark will say, oh yeah, come in right here, and you touch her right there, and you move over there, and you look over there, and you do that, and you do that, and then you go back and you take her and you go out. And you're like, what?
That was a great one. Fresh.
Can you just do that again? No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm fast, but not that fast. I gotta absorb the blocking into the lines, and, you know, that's how I work. And Mark just, you know, he gives you the blocking, and he just wants you to do it right there. And I was, of course, working with everybody else was like in their 20s, you know, 30s. Mm-hmm. So they never get tired. You know, they're always so perky, and I mean, I love them all, but they are. They're like, you know, I'm like a little bit older than that.
Not by much.
Not much. And it takes me longer a little bit to, you know, absorb it. But I got it. I got it, I think, you know, pretty quickly.
We don't see any shred of doubt that you nailed it. Yeah.
Because honestly, Wolf Hollow was such a performance. And like,
sorry to interrupt you. Were there Percocets on set at Wolf Hollow?
Were there what?
Percocet on set.
No.
I'm
That
kidding.
would have been nice though afterwards.
I was like, because that leg was looking rough.
Yeah, they did a good job with that leg. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What was it like in that scene specifically when you guys were in the woods? Like, that's a hell of a drop to kind of pull off. And obviously, they don't just like throw you off
throw
the
Lent
cliff.
Down, down into the
No, you know, it was really actually fun. They showed like a close up of my shoes, which have that really high heel. But I only had those on for that close up. I had on like, you know, boots, you know, hiking boots. And then I had like three guys on this side and three guys on this side. And then I act like I'm falling and I just fall back into their arms. And it looks like I'm falling right off the cliff. So that's how we did that. So it was that exercise where you have to trust that you can fall back and you're going to be caught. So it was really fun to have six guys have their hands all over me. I mean, I haven't done that since the 70s.
You're such a fucking legend.
Mark's sitting behind the camera like, damn. Can I be part of the stunt crew too?
Accidentally scratched an itch.
And they were so worried about, you know, where to grab me. And I said, boys, you can touch me anywhere. So
imagine just all of them blushing.
That broke the ice, you know, for everyone. It was a lot of fun.
On another film that you've done, I remember when we were talking initially about doing this episode, you had told us that you were very proud of Model Hunger. And we both loved the film. We thought the interior dialogue was really good. We thought the blood was really good. The storyline itself made a lot of sense.
Yes.
But I'm very curious as to what you, being part of this project, what were you so proud of for it?
Well, I had worked on Tennessee Williams plays since I was 15. And I always, before I went through all kinds of acting classes and therapy and all that stuff to learn how to have a fluid body and be able to do a character like Marla, I always was able to do these schizophrenic, crazy Southern characters. I don't know why, don't know where it came from. No one taught me. I just knew how to do it.
Just a girl from the Midwest.
Just a girl from the Midwest. I think I was channeled somehow. I don't know, Vivian Leigh, maybe. I'm not sure.
Former life, maybe. But
yeah. I just had been working on Streetcar literally since I was 16, Blanche DuBois. And I thought, wow, this is a great opportunity to make this character Southern, like a Southern belle, but she's also a serial killer and schizophrenic. And a cannibal. So I just put all that together. And for the first time, I was able to show all that work I had done on Tennessee Williams for years. So that's why I was so, you know, proud and happy to be able to do that.
Because the delivery of some of your lines were masterful, I thought.
Thank you.
Fucking terrifying, but also you could tell that this is an actress's actress in this role. I'm curious. Miss Lowry.
Yes.
Lowry.
You know, you can just call me Lynn.
Lynn. I'll call you Lynn.
You can call her Madam, too.
What else?
You can call me Baroness. Call me Baroness.
Baroness Lynn. Madam, what have you been up to aside from the things that we have already talked about? Is there anything else you're working on, just personal stuff that you're excited about? What's been going on with you? Because it's been a while since we've sat down and talked.
Right. Gosh. I have done this year 12 film projects.
Damn.
Just this year.
Damn.
And of course, you know, I have Fang too. Did you see Fang?
I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Oh, you have to see Fang.
I love
it. Oh, it's disturbing. I'll see if I can get the director to send you
a
screener.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll do that.
We do that.
My acting in that, I mean, not to sound egotistical, but my acting's really good in that. I look horrible. I look just horrible in it. But I have fifth stage Parkinson's. So, I am so insane in that film. I'm driving my son mad to the point where he literally thinks he's turning into a rat. It's really disturbing and beautifully shot. So, yeah. So you got to see that. I'll contact Richard Berg and try to get that to happen. So anyway, so this year, gosh, I wish I had the list. I did Night of the Dead Sorority Babes.
I saw the proof of concept for that looked awesome.
Yeah.
Very excited for that.
That was a lot of fun. I play the cannibal witch, Kimberly. I'm a cannibal witch. And she's great. She's very sexy, but she's also really lethal, and she's got a great sense of humor, and Anne Myrna is my sister, and we really hit it off, and we're so fun together. You know, it's real campy and fun, and there's a lot of blood in it and everything. I mean, the proof of concept was awful because I had to pull that baby out of her. You know, I was like, I know Anne asked me, she said, Lynn, do you have any problem, you know, pulling a baby out of someone's vagina? And I was like, I've never done that, but, you know, I guess.
I'm from the 70s, darling.
Is it hands on? I'll do it. So that was interesting. So we did the full feature, and I think it's a lot of fun, you know, to see. And they're a great group of people to work with. I mean, you know, Steve, the director, mm-hmm. is fabulous, and he wrote it. And Angela, Angel
Bradford.
Yes, she also directed with him. So it was great. So I did that, and then I did A Hard Place with Jason Horton.
Mm-hmm. And that's another one with you and Felissa Rose, correct?
Yes, Felissa is in that, and we actually have a scene together. Felissa plays my mother in this movie, which I know sounds really bizarre. But
no, I see it.
I can't explain it. It's too complicated. But she does. So it's a monster movie. Lizard people versus tree people. And I'm the daughter of a tree monster and lizard monster that had sex. And I'm the daughter. And now there's a big feud between the trees and the lizards. And I'm kind of in the middle of it. So the challenging thing about that was we shot in February in Ohio, and the first day I was there, we shot that night, and it was 15 degrees outside we shot.
I think my
so I was really smart. I mean, I had macho shoes, that boots, and three layers of, you know, underwear, and you know, gloves and scarves. And I mean, you couldn't even see me. I look really fat in the movie. I'm not that fat, but I do look fat in the movie. I saw a picture of me. I thought, oh my God, I look so fat.
But you
it's
were
all those clothes.
I'm saying after a Halloween feast, can confirm.
Yeah.
I know. So I did that. And then that was in February. And then I did this movie in Toronto called Jesus Call.
I saw the poster for that.
Yeah, and that, I love working with them. I'd worked with the two cinematographers before. They were great. And the director, Rob, was fabulous. But my scene, she's the craziest I think I've ever been in a movie. I mean, it was just, they said, you know, just go as far as you want. And I mean, I can go pretty far. You know? So I was really, really crazy in it. So that was a lot of fun. And then that was what? That was May. God, I hate to leave people out. I did. Oh, and then I did The Mystery of Emma Thorne, which I mentioned already. Mm-hmm. And then I did another segment of Run, of Sanctum, which this is our second segment, where I played this sort of hillbilly person with two sons that are not all there, and we capture people and we kill them. And I got to use my real Southern accent, that, you know, that mountain thing like that. It's real nasal up there. And, you know, you just better watch out because I'm coming for you.
She went Appalachian, you know, real quick.
That Appalachian thing, you know, that. So I got to do that. And that was fun. And I did Bad Apples, where I play this very bitchy kind of businesswoman.
Jesus Christ.
Bad Apples.
You were working with Celeste and...
Celeste.
Yeah, we love Celeste on this show, as well as Jace Carson.
Yes.
God.
Yeah, Celeste kidnapped me. She put tape all around my mouth, that bitch. I'm telling you. No, she was good. She was excellent.
I had to send that to her.
I was going
to
say.
She's excellent in the role. And Morgan from He Knows was in it, and she was everyone was very good in the film. And then I did Slash Squash, the Bigfoot movie, where I play a radio dispatcher, kind of a normal character, which is the hardest for me to do, actually.
Don't know why. Where all this energy at?
And then I did Mind Flip. Oh, and then I did a film called Drag Tires, which is drag queens who are vampires.
That's my shit.
And my scene was with Tom Arnold, so that was like a, you know, so that was really, really fun. That was done here in Atlanta. And then I did Mind Flip with Ken Rowe, which was a great role for me because she's an aging actress who will do anything to find a way to retain her youth. So it's kind of a science fiction comedy horror thing. So that was the last thing I did. And then I have one more proof of concept film, which I can't think of the name of, but I play two characters in it, two twins. And one is like a Janis Joplin, crazy, hippie kind of person, and the other one's very kind of masculine. So that should be fun. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think that's been my year, except with the conventions and the signings and all of that.
So not up to much is what I heard.
No, I did nothing this year. I'm so sad.
What a drag.
No one wants me. What can I say?
It's cool that you've been doing, and it's cool to see this happen so much in horror in general, that there have been just this giant rise recently of these conventions. And I know they're not new necessarily, but like people from all over are being able to get recognized, and people are able to meet their fans. And I got to ask you, because I've heard some wild stories from people, what is the craziest thing that's happened to you at a convention so far?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't really, I've been pretty safe with the conventions. You know, I don't really have any really thrilling, exciting stories. I mean, I went to a party in somebody's room one night, and there were a bunch of, you know, people, and half of them didn't even know who I was, and they were at the convention. So that was kind of interesting for me, because they just treated me like a regular person. Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, being like, oh, no, tell us about George Romero, you know, and all that. But
he was a dude.
I know. He was a cool dude, man. But they just, everyone comes up to me at the shows, and they're very respectful, and they appreciate my acting, you know, ability. And, you know, that's pretty much, I have really nothing thrilling. I'll have to think about that question, though, because I'm sure there have been things that have happened, but I just can't think of anything right now. There were vampire teenagers at one of my shows that were going around biting some of the guests, but they didn't bite me. So, you know, it didn't happen to me.
You hit them with that fucking model hunger hit.
No, they found them. They threw them out, thank God. They had security over them and stuff. Whatever. But, oh, The Journals of Jonah was another thing I did this year, which I don't want to forget that because the director, Tommy, it is so creative, and Debbie Rochon is in it. It is like, honestly, if you got stoned and watched it, it would be fantastic.
Thank you
it's
for that.
It's really, really bizarre.
I appreciate the heads up on that.
Yeah.
And I play an Irish woman in that. And I also did Rhyme that year, but we talked about that. Mm-hmm. So those are the other two I couldn't remember that was bothering me. So I think I got everybody this year.
I only counted 8. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh. Don't be a smart ass.
I can't help that. It's my whole shtick.
It's just who you are, man.
Can't help it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we've talked about like the craziness of the 70s a little bit too. Mm-hmm. Do you think that kind of,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like nowadays it sounds like the craziest thing is like 6 dudes putting their hands on you, which compared to the 70s doesn't sound that crazy. So
yeah, no, that didn't happen then. Maybe 2, but
not 6. What do you think is the biggest difference now? Because you've been like on so much of a side of the production side as well in the modern era in the indie world. What do you think the biggest difference is right now for your experiences between back then and now?
Well, there's a couple of differences. The first one is, back then, back in the day, that everything was hands on, and a lot of the things now, I mean, a lot of the people I'm working with now are actually doing hands on, which is really great. But you know, the bigger productions, like the remake of The Crazies that I did, and mm-hmm. things like that, it's not hands on, and they, you know, they have like 6 levels of crazy, you know, and it's just a job for the people. You know, they do a good job. I'm not saying they don't do a good job, but it's a job. It doesn't have that passion, that wanting to make something that will be remembered, that people will look back on, you know, and like, you know, go, oh my God, you know, in the original Crazies, you know, that character is like attacked and raped by her father.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like shocking. That is very, oh, I just got goosebumps. That is earthy.
Insane or crazy, if you will.
It is. Whereas in the new Crazies, which is very entertaining and I really enjoyed it, but they don't even have my character and mm-hmm. my father's character in it. And when I, because I did a, you know, I did a cameo in that.
Yeah, you were on the bike.
Oh, yeah, right, the bike. So they didn't tell me to learn a hymn for it. They didn't tell me I was going to ride a bike for it. So I got to the set and they said, do you know the hymn? I was like, what? And it was the night before. They had to send me the hymn. They had to send me the music. They had to send me a recorder to play it. I had to learn it all, be up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do the hymn. And now you got to ride a bike. You know how to ride a bike, right? And I said, yeah, like 50 years ago, I had like a female racer bike.
Nice.
but not now. I haven't done it in a long time. So, oh yeah, you got to do the hymn, you got to ride the bike, and it's 30 degrees. We're going to put you in a sleeveless cotton dress with sneakers and bobby socks, and you've got to come up this alley. The crew's going to push you up the alley. You have to hit these certain pools of light from the sun on certain words of the song and cut around Timothy Oliphant as close as you can. And I was so stressed out. I was just like, $22 million and you couldn't tell me I had to learn a hymn? I mean, you know, it's that kind of thing. So back then, George, you know, would just say, so Lynn, this scene, you need to be crazier.
Mm.
And you had to be crazier. You had to find that in you, not have the makeup person come in and put like two more layers of makeup on you so you look crazier. You had to just find it. And there was this passion and this family feeling of wanting to do something that would be memorable. And I'll tell you flat out that in another 50 years, no, and not to put the remake down, okay, Case Breck, Breck Eisner's, you know, listening, because I'd still like to work with you. but, you know, no one's going to remember the remake. But everyone in another 50 years will remember Romero's The Crazies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big difference.
Absolutely. And actually something I just want to touch on from a personal standpoint at this point, I think I've actually told you this before, Lynn, but The Crazies is actually my favorite Romero film. And with the gravity of what you were just talking about with like adding the makeup effects, you know, throughout just expression of the actor, as opposed to like being something that's needed for like a special effect or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One of the scenes that will always stand out in my head is that scene where your character goes crazy and you're standing out in the middle of the field and all of the CDC is lined up with rifles on the outside, and there's just that look on your face when you turn around and like the mm-hmm. firing line goes off. That's just like I can't imagine how modern film would capture that the same way. And that was like one of that was when I fell in love with Lynn Lowry.
And then all those sheep ran by.
Yeah.
they paid a lot for those sheep. But you know, the funny thing is I didn't want to do that scene that way.
Really?
I wanted to have a big death. Mm. I was like, this is my first death in a movie. And I told George, I said, you know, I want him to shoot me like in the leg and then I'll fall. And then I'll like, you know, I'll crawl and I'll grab onto the soldier's leg and he can pull me across the field. And you know, like, and I'll die again.
I can't put her down.
die a few times. And, you know, and George said, no, I just want you to turn and say, oh. And I was like, oh, no, that's so lame, George. Let me die big. And he was like, no.
So lame.
I know. And of course, you know, when I saw the film many years later, I realized that because of the rape and then my father's suicide,
mm-hmm.
you can't top that with a big scene. You have to top it with something that is childlike and innocent,
mm-hmm.
you know, meaningful and curious almost, like, you know, what happens, like that kind of thing. That's what made that so incredibly memorable, was just the simplicity of that moment. So George was absolutely right. And if I had died the way he wanted me to, you wouldn't be remembering that scene right now. So.
I'm glad we went for, like, I went through like 30 degrees of emotions right there.
She's a great character. And absolutely. She definitely demises a descent in a very interesting way.
Absolutely. And will always be, that movie will always be such a big part of me. And that's part of the reason that I'm so excited to have you on this show right now, because like you bringing stuff like that to life, as you have with like a lot of these other films that we've talked about so far, has been so incredible. But I'm going to hand it off to Eric for a second, because there's now something that we need to know, especially since we have eaten with you
yes.
before.
Oh, yes, we ate together.
We have dined with yes. one another now.
We have dined. I guess dined is a better word.
I don't think anybody really ate anything. I'm always curious. I asked.
True, those ribs were disgusting.
They were bad. They weren't great. They were so bad that, Lynn, you had to remind me that they're ribs and I'm not supposed to eat them. The fork.
I know, they didn't look like ribs.
That's
I kind of remember that.
Yeah, it was wild. I ask this to everybody, and everybody gives me a completely different answer. Why? That's why I continue to ask this question. But what goes on your pizza? If it's just you're not impressing anybody, you're doing this for you, ordering a pizza, what do you do? What goes on pizza?
What goes on? Oh, what do I put on a pizza? Yes. Oh, pepperoni and mushrooms.
Bam. Finally got a mushrooms in there.
It's like Lynn and Anthony de Blasio are the only two that confirm
that. I mean, I like other pizzas, but, you know, if I only had two choices picked in the whole, you know, universe, I would pick that.
I love that.
The Lynn Lowry standard will definitely keep that in mind.
The other reason why I ask this question is when I'm ordering pizza, I order based off of what my friends order.
Oh, pepperoni and mushroom is really good.
Tonight we're going to have pizza and watch the football game. We might do a Lynn Lowry. Just in your
very tasty.
Especially with the buy one, get one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you for entertaining that.
can you get the second one with all kinds of other stuff on it, or does it have to be the same?
We're going
to
find out.
Yeah, we're going to find out here in about an hour. So.
Because I also like anchovies and black olives on pizza. That's not my favorite.
But you're a briny girl. I got it.
I like variety. That's why all the characters I do, I'm a character actor.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do a different character, you know, for each, you know. Like in A Halloween Feast, you know, she's like June Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver. And yet she, you know, kills 8 people. Mm-hmm. But she does it in a kind of a nice way and sort of like bland, sort of. It's a very fascinating character. And I get to be sexy in it. And I get to have those bondage scenes, which I haven't had a bondage scene since back in the day.
Fucking legend. So I know we're running low on time, but I do want to point out the fact that Gil Branco actually brought that up for A Halloween Feast. He was like, I actually had no concept of this BDSM world. And he was like, it was really my wife who had some experience with it and Lynn Lowry telling me what we should do in the scenes. And I was like, are you telling me Lynn Lowry came in and dominated the scene?
I was a dominatrix. I had to say something. But, you know, but honestly, the girls in the dressing room told me to like say things like, you know, you dirty pig, stuff like that. And I was like, okay. Because I mean, I hate to say it, but I've really never been in a scene like that, in a situation like that.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know what to say, you know, and Gil was just like, well, you know, just have fun and say stuff. And Lou and I were looking at each other like, what the fuck? We really didn't know kind of what to do or say.
Lou's face in that situation.
but my acting ability, you know, takes over. And then that's the character. So I'm just going to say stuff and do stuff and be that. So that's what I did. So I guess I did kind of, you know, become that person.
Charge.
Right.
Say I enjoyed it.
I thought I looked pretty good. I love that long shot up my whole leg.
Absolutely. You know,
that's crazy.
No one contesting that in this household. Because that's the thing too, is like, you know, you look at Model Hunger, and topically you could compare the two characters, but when you kind of like have a bigger look at, you know, like you're saying, like you're a character actor, you're creating different characters between these two, they're really not the same.
No,
they're just really not. Like you said, like we have this June Cleaver character who's very much like sociopathic and, and like killing people left and right kind of shit, compared to someone who's like the Fountain of Youth character that we're talking about earlier, you know.
Right. There's a whole different physicality, whole different way you speak, you know, body language, props, idiosyncrasies, everything. It's all different. It's a completely different person. That's why I like using accents, because it really changes the character quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, But with my but with the Halloween feast, I didn't use an accent. I just was, you know, I kind of was just sort of like me, but a sociopath. So it was interesting.
That ruler is now just fucking in the brains of people for the rest of their lives. That shit was so good. Well, we are running out of time here, but Lynn, I would absolutely love to ask you, what would you like to say to all your fans out there? Because you've got a lot of them over the years.
Yeah, well, you know, gosh, you know, I wouldn't even have come back in 2004 if I hadn't had so many fans, which I didn't even know about. I was so overwhelmed when I realized in 2004, because I hadn't done anything for 10 years, that I had all these fans and that people knew my work. And I was just like, wow, you know. So, I mean, without them, I wouldn't be able to work. I mean, without them, I wouldn't be able to do all these wonderful roles I'm doing and having all these great adventures that I'm having. So I am like just forever grateful to each person that likes my work and texts me or emails me or Facebooks me or anything. And I try to get back to them and let them know. I'm just so flattered and humbled that I was able to touch them in some way.
And that's an incredible notion. And guys, that is Lynn Lowry. This is one of the most exciting things that we've done so far on this show, and thank you guys for being a part of it. Give it up for Lynn Lowry one more time, everybody.
Thank you.
And thank you guys once again for joining us where it creaks, it cracks, and we laugh at the creatures that go bump in the night. Good night, everybody.